Now, on BBC Radio 4, our book at bedtime is The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett. With the disappearance of the pivotal figure of Rory Turnbull, Carol and Jude's investigations seem to have reached a dead end. But is Turnbull's suicide note, plus an apparent trail of drug abuse and financial impropriety, to be taken at face value? Jude, for one, is suspicious.
Jude and Carol were walking along the beach on the Monday afternoon. The tide was low, and the soft sand sucking at their feet made progress slow. Gulliver scampered around them.
"The only thing I know," said Jude wryly, "is that Rory Turnbull isn't dead."
"How do you know that?" said Carol. "All the evidence points the other way."
"There's too much evidence. I detect a bit of overkill in the planning here."
"Planning? Who's planning?"
"Rory Turnbull's, I imagine. Though what he was planning and why, I've no idea."
She looked across towards the yacht club. Behind it, the men who had been repairing the sea wall were dismantling their site. The cranes had already gone.
"And is there any connection between Turnbull's disappearance and the body on the beach? Where did that body go, Carol? Where, come to that, is it now?"
Jude's eyes moved restlessly across the horizon and focused on a high 1930s house with a glass-fronted top floor. As she looked, a flash of sunlight caught on something behind the glass. "That tall house, Carol, who lives up there?"
"Some old bloke. I don't know his name. He's completely housebound, I think."
"But from the top of that house, he can see everything that happens on the beach."
"Well, yes, he probably can, but..."
"Come on!"
And Jude had started running up the beach. Gulliver, recognising another game, pursued her, barking enthusiastically. Boldly, Jude pressed the entry phone button. There was no response. She was about to press again when an electronic voice from the little speaker said,
"Hello?"
"Good afternoon. Are you the gentleman in the top flat?"
"Yes."
"Our names are Carol and Jude. Might we come up and talk to you?"
"About what?"
"About things you may have seen on the beach over the past week."
There was a pause. Then the door buzzed its release, and they went in, leaving Gulliver tied to a garden seat outside. They emerged from the lift onto a small landing. Framed in the doorway opposite was a small man in a wheelchair. He was partially paralysed, his head propped back at a strange angle. His left hand was strapped against the arm of his chair, while his right hovered over a control panel of buttons and levers. He wore a crested blazer and a cravat high round his neck. On his head was an incongruous corduroy cap.
"Good afternoon. Carol and Jude, was it?"
They realised he was talking through some kind of voice box. The cravat must have been there to hide a tracheotomy scar.
"Come in," he said, flicking a control and going into sharp reverse. "My name's Gordon Lithgow, by the way."
A window took up the entire front wall. There was a platform with a ramp, and on the platform stood a telescope on a tripod. Two powerful pairs of binoculars lay on a nearby table.
"I believe you are here for a purpose," said Gordon Lithgow. "I saw you deciding to come up."
"You saw us?" said Carol.
"On the beach. Pity I can't lip-read. But your body language told me you decided to come up here."
"Do you spend most of the day watching the beach?" asked Jude.
"No, I'm basically looking for shipping. Make a log of their comings and goings."
"And what about the people on the beach?"
Jude maintained her direct approach. "Do you make a log of their comings and goings too?" He spun the wheelchair round and faced them. He was smiling.
"I assume what you're interested in is the dead body which you Carol, is it? Found on the beach on Tuesday morning.
Carol felt uncomfortable to know she'd been observed so closely. What we want to know is what happened to the body after I found it around 7. He spun round and selected a ledger from a pile on a shelf. He flicked through the book with his good hand.
7:02. Then you went back home with your dog. At 7:06, a boy climbed over the railings of the yacht club and raised the cover of one of the boats. He then ran out and along the sea wall, looking down into the Feather. Then he ran down onto the beach and found the body at 7:21. He ran off, then came back with another boy. They manhandled the body up the beach, over the railings into the yacht club, and put it back in the boat, the same boat the first boy had looked in. Then they ran off. At 10:12, the police arrived, looked along the beach, not very hard, and left.
But what happened to the body after that? Asked Jude.
That's all I can offer you. Great telescope, but it doesn't have night sights.
So, Carol sighed despondently, it looks as though the body was removed on the Tuesday night under cover of darkness. Where would you put a body, Mr. Lithgow? Into another boat? There was a scrape of electronic laughter.
Come and have a look.
The telescope was trained on the top of the sea wall, where the repairs had been taking place. Revealed were the 2 blue-painted low chests used by the local fishermen to store their bait and equipment.
Bit big, said Gordon Lithgow, but otherwise the right shape for a coffin, isn't it?
Jude, have a look. And of course, said Carol thoughtfully, if whoever it was put the body in there just as a temporary measure and didn't know what was about to happen, their plans would have been really screwed up by the builders coming in. Yes, Jude rose from the telescope. They would, wouldn't they? We'd better go, Mr. Lithgow, said Carol, but I really can't thank you enough.
Any visitor is a welcome diversion. There are some people who come to see me occasionally, but...
Teresa Spaulding, said Jude suddenly. Teresa Spaulding used to come and see you, didn't she?
She did, yes.
And you mentioned the body on the beach to her, and described Carol, which explains why she came to your house, Carol, but there's something we're forgetting. The person you saw on the beach before you found the body.
Ah, said Gordon Lithgow. I wondered if you'd ask about that. That'd be the one who saw the body at 6:57, wearing a shiny green anorak.
Yes. Who was he?
Wasn't he? It was a she. Young girl. It was hardly light, but she was running from the direction of the yacht club. Seemed in a panic until she found the body.
What did she look like? Asked Jude.
Couldn't see the colour of her hair. She had her anorak hood done up tight. Large young woman, though. And I could see one thing. She had a silver stud in her nose.
They set out back towards the High Street. We've got to talk to Tanya, said Jude. She's not the only young woman in the world with a silver nose stud. No, but she's the only one who has a connection with Feathering Yacht Club. If only we could also find a connection between her and Rory Turnbull. Well, he was treasurer of the club, so she must have met him there. Yes, said Jude. Have we got anything else, though? What about the girl your dental hygienist mentioned? Of course. If she lived in Brighton and was doing an evening shift at the club bar, the timing would be right for Rory to give her the occasional lift to work when he'd finished at the surgery. Then we definitely need to talk to Tanya, said Carol. Before we go into the exhumation business... Yes, and for that, I think we need help. The vice-commodore was in, though on his home territory he seemed less assured than in the surroundings of the yacht club. The house's interior was distinctly shabby. In the air, as well as stale Gauloise smoke, hovered the sickly smell of rotting fruit. The squalor of the room brought home to Jude the emptiness of the old man's life.
"I'm sorry, it's a bit of a tip,"
he barked with an attempt at bluffness. Moving aside an ashtray and a couple of smeared beer mugs from a dresser, he rifled through a pile of dusty newspapers and unopened letters. He had shown no surprise at being asked for Tanya's number, and no curiosity as to why it might be wanted.
"Oh, damn, doesn't seem to be here. But I've got the number down at the club. Due to open up there soon anyway, if you wouldn't mind coming along with me."
There was a little knot of elderly cronies already waiting for Dennis Woodville to unlock the clubhouse. Inside the barroom, with the lights switched on, he whispered to Jude,
"Have to get their drinks sorted out first, or I'll never hear the end of it. Can I get you a little something?"
Jude refused, anxious to get away. Eventually, everyone was supplied with a drink, but as the vice-commodore turned to a neat address book by the telephone, he noticed the message light flashing on the answering machine.
"Better check this. Might be the Coast Guard," he said importantly.
The message wasn't from the Coast Guard. It was the voice of a bored young woman.
"Vice-commodore, it's Tanya, calling on Monday afternoon. Thanks for the lunch last week. And the other thing is, could you let me know whether those repairs on the sea wall have been finished yet? I was thinking of coming for a walk to Feathering, and I didn't want to if the building's still going on, you know. Could you call me on..."
Jude scribbled the number down on the back of an envelope.
"And could I have her address, please?"
"Very odd," said the vice-commodore as he pushed the address book across. "What on earth does the girl want to know about the sea wall for?"
"Have you talked to Ted Crisp?"
It was the first thing Jude asked when she arrived, and Carol was proud to be able to say,
"Yes, he's game for a spot of body hunting, around 7.
"Good."
Jude pulled out her mobile phone and keyed in a number.
"Ah, hello, is that Tanya? My name's Jude. We met at the Crown and Anchor at Feathering on Friday. I wanted to talk about a body that got washed up on the beach last week."
With a rueful expression, Jude turned to Carol.
"Maybe the direct approach isn't always the best one. She hung up on me. I think we'd better go and see her."
"In Brighton? How will you get there? I'd offer to drive you over, but if I'm meeting Ted at 7, I..."
"Don't worry. I'll get a cab."
And shortly after, Jude set off for Brighton. Carol felt tense, but the anticipation was not unpleasurable. At least something was happening in her life. When the phone rang at 6:25, she felt a little pang of potential disappointment. It would be Ted Crisp calling off their 7 o'clock tryst. It wasn't.
"Carol, it's me, Jude. I just got to Brighton and paid off the cab when my mobile rang. It was Maggie Kent. Nick's gone missing."
And Joanna Tope reads episode 9 of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett tomorrow evening at 11:15. The producer in Edinburgh is David Jackson Young.